Well, Pat Summitt wrote three books, including the 1998 memoir Reach for the Summit, co-authored by her longtime friend, the Washington Post's Sally Jenkins. And Sally, you became great friends. So sorry.
Well, thank you. You know, but she's released, and it had been a long, hard fight. And I think I'm glad that she's not having to fight, you know, anymore. Yeah.
Well, we know you met when you were writing a book together, and you're on the last day finishing up. Everything's done. And she says what?
She said, you need to come back down here and I'll cook for you. And, you know, so we just became just really good friends over the course of the book. And then over the next 20 years, it grew into obviously, a very deep and sustained friendship.
Yeah. Is it true that she, you know, she talked about the barn where they put up the hoop, but I mean, it really kind of was a log cabin. I mean, you know, this was pretty primitive.
Yeah. I mean, Pat, listen, nobody, very few people in today's world will understand just what kind of poverty Pat came from, because it was rural poverty, and it's hard to describe. I mean, she was born and brought home to a real log cabin that had chinks in the logs, and her brothers can remember waking up with snow had blown in overnight. They drank water from a pump, a handle pump off the back porch. What she was born into was a kind of rural poverty you don't see much of anymore.
Yeah, we read no money to go to the doctor, so when they got sick, her mama made a mixture of Listerine, ground up aspirin, and salt water, and Daddy said, get well.
Yeah, I mean, she can only remember going to the doctor one time before she got to college.
Well, and this is the stern stuff she was born of and that she applied to basketball. I mean, you know, we remember the fierce looks, the way sometimes she would talk to the players and, did she ever think it was too much, too tough?
Oh, yeah, she worried about it all the time. I asked her, that was one of the first things I asked her was, Pat, do you ever worry that you're too hard on them? And she said, oh, yeah. She said, I have a trench in my lower lip where I've chewed my lip, you know, worrying about that. But, you know, the way she explained it to me, I said, aren't you worried that, you know, you're embarrassing them in practice, for instance? And she said, Sally, do you think they would rather be embarrassed in an empty gym with me or embarrassed by playing this way in front of 40,000 people? She said, I'm trying to save them from being embarrassed, and I'm trying to help them feel better about themselves in a high-pressure situation. Yeah. And once she explained that, you know, I really began to just so admire. I loved watching her in practice. I loved watching her teach.
Yeah. Well, and she was having women enter what was a men's world.
Yes, and that was the whole point. I mean, she really, at the time, you know, you have to remember, I mean, they didn't even have athletic scholarships for women when Pat first began coaching. So she wasn't coaching to develop WNBA players. You know, just a few hundred people came to those first games. I mean, Pat herself set up the chairs. Mm-hmm. For the spectators. So, you know, she was a very pure coach and a very pure teacher that way because, you know, there wasn't a future in women's basketball. The future that she was trying to create for them was a future in the workforce.
One of our favorite Pat Summitt stories has to do with the birth of her son. She was on a recruiting trip. She'd gone to, I think it was Allentown, Pennsylvania, to speak with this recruit's family. Her water broke. She goes to the family's home. Oh, my water broke. 8.5 months pregnant. And then races back to the jet with her poor assistant who's about to faint. She gives her assistant, I think, a manual on how to birth a child because she needed to fly back to have her son born in Tennessee.
It's an absolutely true story. Her assistant coach, Mickey DeMoss, said, Pat, what do I do? And Pat had a little pamphlet in her purse that I think her doctor had given her before she traveled. And Pat was literally on her hands and knees in the aisle of the airplane having labor pains. And the pilots wanted to land the plane because they could hear her cries from the back of the airplane. And they were going to put the plane down in Virginia. Well, Virginia had beaten Tennessee in the NCAA tournament that year. And Pat said, if you land that plane in Virginia, you're going to have a mad woman on your hands. You need to get me back to Tennessee. And it really wasn't just Tennessee. Obviously, she wanted to be with her husband. They got her there, and Pat remembered getting wheeled away from the airplane on a gurney and seeing the fuel, the black streaks along the side of the plane because they'd burned so much fuel so fast.
No way they were going to land there.
Yeah.
But boy, just somebody, I mean, she wore her passion on her face.
Yes. In her eyes. I mean, it was like standing with, when Pat was fired up like that, it was like standing next to a nuclear reactor. I mean, you could see the red, you could see her throat turn red and her eyes. I mean, she had very, very bright eyes, extremely bright eyes. And when she was particularly fired up, I mean, they were blazing. I mean, Pat had a real blaze about her. And one of the ways that you knew that she was getting sicker was that you could see her eyes got dimmer. You know, she didn't have such brilliance in her eyes.
Yeah. Sally Jenkins, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. It's always a joy to talk about her. She was a gift, just a magnificent friend and a loving friend. And as beloved as she is in public, you know, really, she was more loved in private. It's hard to explain to people. As much as the public adored her, her friends and family had an even deeper, intense love for her.
Sally, thank you.
Thank you.